I would say that the sirens from that day were really deafening, and that we didn't quite understand the severity of it until we saw the police cars that were driving through like the drill field, like cars that were trying to get, they were trying to get somewhere. And I think just the presence of the amount of police told us that it there this wasn't a mass kind of, I don't know, medical emergency, that something was really wrong and happening.
Hi, I'm John Yeager, and this is Bloodworks 101, the podcast designed to inspire you to donate either time, money, or blood. What does April 16th mean to you? If you're drawing a blank, that's because you didn't live through one of the deadliest mass shootings in the United States that happened April 16th, 2007. The school shooting at the Blacksburg, Virginia campus of Virginia Tech left 33 people dead, including the shooter. West Seattle's Whitney Moore remembers that day, remembers how scared she was as she waited for the all clear to leave her classroom on the Virginia Tech campus. That was 17 years ago. Today, Whitney Moore is trying to reclaim that day by using it for a, well, I'll let Whitney take it from here and tell you a little bit more about herself.
Whitney Moore started a marketing business last year after leaving being the executive director at the West Seattle Chamber of Commerce. So I love small businesses. I've worked for two chambers, then started my own little boutique marketing agency. So helping businesses with social media, consulting, things like that. And I enjoy volunteering in the community, which is what I'm doing for this blood donation drive that we're going to talk about. And I have an adopted street that I clean up every now and then. And I'm volunteering for the West Seattle Grand Parade. Yeah, very active in the community and with my little small business.
So Tuesday, April 16th, has a special significance to you. Can you unpack that a little bit?
17 years ago, April 16th, 2007, I was a junior on the campus at Virginia Tech. And I went to my first class of the week and of the day, 9 a.m., arts management in the Performing Arts Building. And we were getting feedback on our assignment that we had presented on Friday. And after a while, we had to stop talking because the sirens were too loud for us to continue hearing each other. And we would then spend the next 3 to 4 hours locked in that building, sitting on the floor of a different room, and come to find out later that the worst school shooting in the history of the United States had been occurring 2 buildings away.
And it was a different kind of climate then. You didn't have TikTok, you didn't have Twitter, you didn't have X, you didn't have Facebook, you didn't have Instagram. None of that instant communication structure was there, was it?
Exactly. We didn't have any of that. We didn't have smartphones. So the information that we were getting, and in the beginning, I hate to say this, but it seemed like not a big deal. We had only heard from other people that weren't on campus at that time that there was a shooting and that a man and a woman had been shot. And I would say at the time, the kind of the thought was that it was a domestic isolated incident, that it was like intimate partner violence. And I don't think that we had known at that time that they were even killed, but that was what we thought this campus reaction was. We thought that the sirens that we heard were related to that, not that that was a first incident, and that that was a decoy, and that a person had the presence of mind to then go to the post office and mail a package to NBC with their manifesto, with their writings and their videos, and then go chain the doors of another building across campus.
Tell me about that day for you. Tell me about what went through your mind, and not knowing must have been really difficult. You heard the sirens, but you didn't know everything. In that vacuum, I'm sure a lot of things have to come into your mind.
Yes, and usually now, you know, nowadays when you hear a siren, it's because someone's going by you and you get over, and then you never know what's happening. I would say that the sirens from that day were really deafening, and that we didn't quite understand the severity of it until we saw the police cars that were driving through like the drill field, like cars that were trying to get, they were trying to get somewhere. And I think just the presence of the amount of police told us that this wasn't a mass kind of, I don't know, medical emergency, that something was really wrong and happening. So I would say that we were really confused. And just with every emergency, you've got every kind of mix of person, people that are, let me call the news to tell them what I can see. Let me call my family and tell them I love them. Should I go to my next class? The people that are on autopilot and going to proceed as necessary. And the cell phone towers were jammed, so we weren't getting calls. In the very beginning, I got a call from my mom because she works with Customs and Border Protection. And anytime something happens, some kind of mass incident, they're one of the first people to find out about it, especially since September 11th. And I didn't know that something that big was happening. So the information we got, I would say, inconsistent, not to the level that it was what was really happening and unfolding. And I think the longer that we were sitting there, the worse that we started to feel, and the worse that it was really setting in that something catastrophic had occurred.
Did you know anyone who was killed?
Not directly, no, I did not. But one of my best friends was supposed to be there. So she would have been in the class, in those four classrooms, lots of engineering and language and some of the urban planning classes. She was on a class trip in Pennsylvania at the time. And she would have been in the very next group coming in.
Then what did you find out in the days and weeks ahead? You must have had news crews all over campus.
Absolutely. So When I got home, they shut the bus services down, so everyone had to either walk or get a ride. And when I got home, my roommates were watching the news. That was the first time that I knew just how bad it was. And the TV station kept the body count in the top right corner of the broadcast. And I would never recommend, like, it was just horrifying. It just kept unfolding and kept getting worse. But probably the hardest day was Wednesday. By that time, the package had arrived to the news station, and they were broadcasting what he had sent.
What made you decide to use April 16th and sort of reclaim it?
I think it's really the only choice that you have. It's the only way to really honor all of those people. And people said afterwards, they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, but they were students and teachers in a classroom. So I think that you have the choice to just be sad about how the world is and accept that. Or you can actively do something different. That person chose to do something horrible. You can choose to do something wonderful. So I don't like the idea of just accepting what's handed to you. And if there's anything that I could tell people about a tragedy, is to look for what is something wonderful for you to put all of the feelings in, because they're complicated. It's grief, it's anger, it's everything on the range of the human experience. But just to put that energy somewhere that's really constructive, because that's sometimes really all you have.
And this happened when the shooting happened in Las Vegas a few years ago.
Mandalay Bay.
Mandalay Bay, right. And we had news reporters coming over to the Seattle Central Donor Center and telling them that we need 1,000 donations a day simply to keep up with demand. and also telling them that we're so grateful that people were moved by the coverage that they would donate blood. But in reality, there needs to be blood on the shelves before this unthinkable thing happens, wherever it does, whether it's man-made or natural. What kind of message would you have? I guess I'm teeing you up for this one. to people who are moved by this kind of coverage and this kind of story to be told today.
Absolutely. It's to donate when it's not sexy. Donate when it's not urgent. Donate when you're not feeling impassioned. Make it part of your regular life that every few months you donate, as it's just a standing thing that you do, like going to the dentist, that it's just a normal part. It's woven into the fabric of your life, that every few months you're going to save up to three lives. And I can't think of anything better to do with 45 minutes. There's nothing that I can do as a person that I know will have such a great impact as this.
So tell me about West Seattle and April 16th.
The last few years, I donate on April 16th and after, and donate regularly. But 3 years ago, I asked my boyfriend at the time if he would donate with me, and I told him why it's important. And then the next year, I asked another friend of ours, could we donate together? So the three of us went together. He's now my fiance. And I just thought, with the presence that I have in the community, can I just make it a little bit bigger? So I partnered with a local business, Seattle Sorbets. They make delicious sorbet that comes in a convenient pint size. And that's also the amount that you donate when you give blood. So I created Pint for a Pint. And Seattle Sorbets is donating a pint of sorbet to everyone who donates as part of our blood drive on Tuesday. And we've filled all 60 spots. So very excited that West Seattle is showing up. And this is an existing pop-up for Bloodworks Northwest in West Seattle. So it's very convenient for everyone and no additional effort. We're just going to show up to where it's already happening. And Pecos Pit Barbecue is catering lunch for the staff, because I'm sure it'll be a really busy day for them. And I'm giving blood at 9 a.m. and I'll be there all day, because I probably know most of the people who are donating.
What message do you have for those people who hear this and want to make an appointment for that day and they can't get in? What do you tell those people?
I say, start hydrating and make an appointment with Bloodworks Northwest in your area.
Whitney Moore, thank you so much. God bless you for this. This is fantastic.
Thank you, John.
Whitney Moore, the former executive director of the West Seattle Chamber of Commerce, who currently runs her own marketing firm called Electric Butter Marketing. If you'd like more information on how to donate, just go to our website at bloodworksnw.org and click on Schedule a Donation. And that'll do it for this edition of Bloodworks 101. I'm your host, John Yeager. See you next time.